Welcome back to DMR. Thank you for tuning back in as always. Much obliged. So today I'm going to be doing a episode on the Godzilla franchise. So Godzilla. So this guy or massive nuclear giant lizard. I am a fan of the movies. They have rehashed or done a reboot of the franchise from 2014. And we've had several movies since then, but it goes back a lot further than that. And the reason why I'm doing an episode on this one today is because I feel that this franchise is very much hit and miss. So we've got another one that is coming out with Godzilla and King Kong. Can't remember the exact title of it. I'll get that back up in a moment. However, I've seen the second trailer for it and I'm a bit concerned about where this franchise is going. So, but before we get into the big lizard, the big guy, let's go over a sharp looking suit from MJ Bale. All right, so we've got the Fresco jacket and trouser combo slim fit. So this is a very sharp looking suit and the color of it is very intriguing. It's called Driftwood. So it's kind of like a light brown beige color, but I actually quite like it. Never been a massive fan of brown suits, but this thing looks very, very suave. Very, very suave indeed. So an MJ Bale icon in the making, the single-breasted Fresco jacket has been crafted from a premium stretch cotton blend. That's interesting. Cotton blend that has been woven in Italy into a natty twill. Cut to our regular fit, it does say slim fit at the top. It features a deconstructed shoulder, notch lapel, hatch pockets, and is half lined. So very sharp looking suit, the Fresco jacket. Jump on MJ Bale. You'll see the link for the website in the show. So jump on there, take a look at it. It is a very sharp suit and it will be a must for your MJ Bale collection. All right, so let's go over the big guy. So Godzilla is a fictional monster or kaiju that debuted in 1954. That was a long time ago. Directed and co-written by Ishiro Honda. The character has since become an international pop culture icon, appearing in 38 films in total. You've got 30 Japanese films, you've got 5 American films, then you've got 3 animated films. That is a huge resume. Video games, novels, comic books, and television shows. Godzilla has been dubbed the king of the monsters. So there you go. Going back with my own involvement with Godzilla, I remember seeing some of the old school movies that came out. It might have been the ones that came out in the 80s, maybe, I think it was. And then I had various toys here and there of Godzilla as I was growing up. But I think the first one that I saw, proper one, was the one that came out in 1998. They tried to reboot the franchise or the American version of it with Matthew Broderick in the film, basically, which captured Godzilla being a nuclear or mutant style of iguana that basically was born in the 1950s, I think it was, basically after some nuclear testing in the, was it the French atoll, I think it was back then. So pretty cool when I was watching it as a young pup in 1998. So I'll go over that film a little bit later on. So, Godzilla is a prehistoric reptilian monster awakened by the power of nuclear radiation. With nuclear bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the lucky Dragon 5 incident, whatever that is, fresh in Japanese consciousness, Godzilla was conceived as a metaphor for nuclear weapons. Others have suggested that Godzilla is a metaphor for the United States as a giant beast woken from its slumber that takes terrible vengeance on Japan. So that is actually kind of true, because that's what they said when they bombed Pearl Harbor, that they had awakened a sleeping giant, and we know the rest is basically history. So the US dropped two bombs on Japan, which was Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and had devastating effects obviously on those people, and it ended World War II in 1945. So it's interesting that he came out thereafter, 10 years or 9 years after the war ended in Japan or around the world, basically. So, interesting stuff. So, going back over. So, yeah, appearing in 1954, Godzilla has starred in a total of 38 films. 38 films. So, 33 Japanese films, as I mentioned. So, that's huge. So, I don't think there's any other type of franchise that has come out with that many films. That is a monster of a list, excuse the pun. So very interesting to see that that many movies has come out over such a long time. I think the other one might have been close, actually not even close, would be Batman, but there's not that many films with him in it, really. Of course, there's cartoons and all that stuff, and they had the show in the 50s and whatnot, but you got Gotham as well, but yeah, nowhere near that in terms of what Godzilla has done. So the reason why I've jumped on here and basically started to do an episode on this is because the American versions are starting to concern me. So when the reboot came out in 2014, bang on, this film was a cracker of a film. So let's go over a few of them after this short little trailer.
It's Godzilla.
All right, so before I get into the films a little bit in depth into the films, let's go over Godzilla's abilities. So I'm on Wikipedia here summarizing this. So Godzilla's signature weapon is his atomic heat beam, or his atomic breath, nuclear energy that is generated inside of his body using electromagnetic force to concentrate it into a laser-like high-velocity projectile and unleashes it from its jaws in the form of a blue or red radioactive beam. So there you go. So we've seen that in a lot of his movies, especially the more recent ones. It has a preference to travel Earth's hydrosphere when in hibernation or migration, and it can breathe underwater. There you go, didn't know that. And it's described in the original film by the character Dr. Yamani as a transition between a marine and terrestrial reptile. So there you go. Godzilla is shown to have great vitality. It is immune to conventional weaponry thanks to its rugged hide and ability to regenerate, and as a result of surviving a nuclear explosion, it cannot be destroyed by anything less powerful. So let's go over his roar. Godzilla has a distinct roar which was created by composer Akira Ufukubi, who produced the sound by rubbing a pine tar resin coated glove along the string of a contrabass and then slowing down the playback. Wow, there you go. Pretty crazy. So if we go over Godzilla's size as well, let's have a look here. So how big is the big fella? So what have we got there? So Godzilla is estimated to be 121.9 meters tall, or 400 foot tall. There you go, he's a big fella, big boy, big boy. So couple of interesting little points there about Godzilla and the size and of the character and his abilities as well. So, all right, so let's fast forward down to 1998. So this is when, as I said, I had my first kind of movie or cinematic experience with Godzilla. So I was pretty psyched for Godzilla at this point in time. I was in year 8. So I was a young pup. I might have been, what was that age, 11 at the time, 12, something like that. 1985, 13, okay, I was 13 at the time, so there was big hype around this. So back in the 90s, so blockbuster movies were very, very cool. And when I say cool, the cinematography and the special effects back in the 90s, and basically when Jurassic Park came out, it was an absolute game changer, which was a huge mix of CGI, which still looks very good today, and animatronics as well with Steven Spielberg. So then you had movies like Independence Day that came out. And what I'm talking about, a cinematic experience, is that when you used to go into the cinema, the advertising around movies was massive, massive. Especially for Independence Day, I remember walking into the cinema and the huge posters and huge cutout or cardboard cutout villains or whatever have you of the movie were in the lobby of the movie, and it just brought that whole experience to life. Very, very cool. So they still have that today to a degree, but it's nowhere near of how it was back in the day in the 90s. So I feel that we've lost that kind of cinematic experience, because like obviously watching the movie is one thing, but when you go into it, it's almost like lining up for a line at Movie World or a theme park or something along those lines, where it adds to that whole experience. So when Godzilla was being rebooted, they basically did very similar stuff where they had all the cardboard cutouts coming in, and walking into the film was a big experience. So when I look back at the movie, and I still don't mind watching it, it was on the cable or streaming services the other day, and I did flick it on. I was watching parts of it. So it is very cheesy when you look back at it, but when I was a kid, it was very, very cool to watch up on the screen. So the CGI, when you look at it now, going back to it, was really bad. It was very, very bad. Especially there's a scene where Godzilla is basically, or gives birth or lays eggs, and all the eggs are in Madison Square Garden, and the CGI on these mini Godzillas is very, very bad. It's the same as the large one or the parent that's running through New York, but it just looks very, very bad when you look back at it now. A lot. It's funny because it's a lot worse than Jurassic Park when it came out, which is weird because it takes place 5 years after when Jurassic Park came out in 1993, but the cinematography and how they've done this particular beast doesn't look very good at all. So, yes, very interesting what they did there. It didn't rate very well, that movie. And when you look at Godzilla versus the ones that come out now and the ones that came out in the 50s right up until the 80s, what they did is they made the character of Godzilla very much like a T-Rex. It was very, very fast. And reading over here on Wikipedia, this is what they're basically talking about that in particular. So in Godzilla 1998, special effects artist Patrick Tatopoulos was instructed to design Godzilla as an incredibly fast runner. At one point, it was planned to use motion capture for a human to create the movements of the computer-generated Godzilla, but it was said to have ended up looking too much like a man in a suit. So Tapapula subsequently reimagined the creature as a lean and digi-graded bipedal iguana-like creature that stood with its back and its tail parallel to the ground, rendered via CGI. Several scenes had the monster portrayed by stuntmen in suits. The suits were similar to those used in the Toho films, with the actors' heads being located in the monster's neck region and facial movements controlled by animatronic. So there's a big mix of those two. You can definitely tell when the guys are in the suits because their arms are quite floppy, especially the baby Godzillas and whatnot. But yes, it's interesting what they did with that. So not a very good movie when you go back. But again, I do like to watch it because it has that kind of nostalgic feel with it. All right, so fast forward into 2014. We'll go over the franchise that has been rebooted and where it is heading. All right, so fast forward many, many years later. So what's that, 16 years? And then we had a reboot in Godzilla, same name. So the character was portrayed by entirely CGI. So they did this very well. I thought when this came out, they had a very big sense of fear and size around Godzilla. And they still kind of used him as a good guy in the movie, but not to the extent where he was dodging humans and not destroying cities and whatnot. He definitely did that. But versus what happened with the villains in this particular movie, which was a Muto. I think they were like a big parasite type things, two of them. But they handled it very well. So Godzilla's design in the reboot was intended to stay true of that in the original series, and they did that. They did that very well. Though the film's special effects team strove to make the monster more dynamic than a guy in a big rubber suit. To create a CG version of Godzilla, the moving picture company studied various animals such as bears, Komodo dragons, lizards, lions, and wolves, which helped the visual effects artists visualize Godzilla's body structure, like that of an underlying bone, fat, and muscle structure, as well as the thickness and texture of its scales. So motion capture was also used for some of Godzilla's movements. So the storyline in that movie was very, very good. I liked how they portrayed it up on the screen. It flowed very well. Character development was quite good. You've also got a few actors in the movie that are very well known. You got Heisenberg, the guy that plays Walter White in the film. He's only in it for a very short amount of time, which is Bryan Cranston. So they really pumped that up in terms of him being a main character in this particular film, which he is, but he's not in it for very long. So I think that movie did very, very well. Then they had the sequel that came out. Now, the follow-up to this was a huge bloated mess, in my opinion. They had very weak human characters in the film, and typically with a sequel, they jam-packed it full of monsters. There weren't just Godzilla versus the Muto, it was Godzilla versus, I think there was like, who knows, there could have been like 12, 13 of them, something along those lines, where they basically had a lot of different monsters in the film, and it just crammed way too much of it. The second film actually felt like a third film, but they definitely suffered from sequel-itis in this particular film, and I didn't think it was as good as the first. Godzilla seemed to move a lot quicker in the second film, very similar to the 1998 version, despite him having his original-looking structure of his body. But basically, they didn't do a good job in the second one. So very, very hesitant in terms of where they were going at the time with that, because I felt it was quite flat compared to what they did in the first. So again, with sequels, sometimes less is more, or at least keep it on the same level where you've got the same amount of bad guys in the film. And like most sequels, when they cram too many bad guys into it, it becomes a bloated mess and people don't like it. They don't like it. So the next one after that was Godzilla versus Kong. So actually, when I started my podcast or movie review channel on YouTube, that was the first film that I reviewed. And I managed to catch it at the cinema when they were letting people back in, I think, in 2021. So I really enjoyed that film. Very, very simple. The cinematography was very good in it. Very good action scenes in it. I like how they went to that underworld type scenario. And you had just two characters or two villains in the movie that were basically going toe-to-toe. Godzilla was still classed as a villain, so to speak, because he was still destroying a lot of places. Some people thought he was good in the film. We've also got Kong that was in that particular film. He was definitely the good guy in the film. So interesting take on what they did there. And that was the third movie, which I thought was better than the second one, far better than the second movie. So they did quite well. Scratch that. There was actually three monsters in Godzilla versus Kong, which was Godzilla, King Kong, and Mecha Godzilla at the end. He was only in it for a short stint and he wreaked havoc. So he was a pretty good villain in it. So they did have three monsters in it. However, I felt it was quite good with that. So this is the whole point of this particular podcast, is that this series is very hit and miss. So I don't know where they're going to be going with this particular franchise now. So there is another film that I haven't seen yet, which apparently is an absolute ball terror in terms of the film, which is Godzilla Minus One. It's set back in the 1950s post-World War II, so they've gone back to their roots with it. It's in Japanese as well, and a lot of other movie reviewers had it in their top 10 last year, and I want to catch it. I do want to catch it because the trailer for it looked quite good. So very interesting how they're going about it. And that wasn't an American. I don't believe it's an American style of film. I think it could be Japanese. Let me just click on here. So you've got Godzilla Minus One. Let's have a bit of a rundown on this particular film. So came out 2023. It's a Japanese epic. So there you go. So they've gone back to their roots on this particular film. And I think from what I've heard, it's how Godzilla basically should be. So we've got the latest one that is coming out this year, which is Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire. So this is where I'm concerned. So the first trailer came out for this. They're back in the underworld or whatever it is. You've got Godzilla and Kong. They're split up. So Kong is kind of the main character again in this. And they've got a new adversary that is a big orange type monkey, or ape, if you will. But what concerns me is the second trailer for this film that has come out. And you've got King Kong, which has got some huge mechanical type glove on. And then you've got both of them that are running like humans towards this new adversary or new villain. So I'm concerned that they're going through a Marvel type setup with this particular franchise where they're hit and miss. The first film was good, the third film was good, but now you've got another one which basically looks like it's going to be like a Marvel type movie. So I'm quite concerned about where they're going to go with this. I think they're going to lose people with this next film because they're just going way too far. We've also got the show that has been on Apple, which is the Monarch show. I haven't finished it because it got boring in the middle with weak human characters, and I just basically haven't gone back to it. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with this particular franchise. So again, I am concerned with this next film. So thank you for tuning in to my review for the Godzilla franchise on a whole. And as always, laters on the Menjay.